praise tonight for your guidance, that our decisions will always be for the greater good of our community. Amen.
If you please join me in the pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I'd like to mention that we do have Counselor Lisa Naya Flores and Counselor Carla Nymeyer on the phone today. First item on the agenda today would be approval of the agenda.
So moved, Mayor.
We have a motion and a second. Roll call vote, please.
Ms. Naya Flores. Ms. Flores?
Yes.
Mr. Chavez?
Yes.
Ms. Waters?
Yes.
Mr. Carter?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Ms. Nymeyer? Thank you. Can you hear me, Carla?
Yes.
Okay.
Next item on the agenda would be City of Carlsbad financials for June 2022. Call on Ms. Sutsego.
Good evening, Mayor Pro Tem and Council. Thank you for being here this evening. I'm sure you've had an opportunity to review the financials that are provided in your agenda packet. Therefore, I will only provide you a brief summary of the city's cash position as of June 2022, the 12th and final accounting period for fiscal year 22. The city had a beginning fiscal year cash balance of $95.9 million and an ending cash balance of $104.4 million. The city's revenues of $110.2 million are $4.3 million favorable to the $105.9 million budget and 4% above target. The city's labor costs of $49.2 million are $3.4 million favorable to the $52.6 million budget and 6% below target. The city's operating costs of $39 million are $7.9 million favorable to the $46.9 million budget and 17% below target. The city's capital costs of $14.3 million are $29.8 million favorable to the $44.1 million budget and 68% below target. Overall, from the previous fiscal year, there has been an increase of $8.5 million in the cash balance. This will conclude my summary and ask for any questions.
Any questions, Ms. Sutsego? Thank you. Next item on the agenda would be consider approval of resolution 2022-33, a resolution making certain budgetary adjustments to the 2021-22 fiscal year budget. Ms. Sutsego.
Thank you again, Mayor Pro Tem and Council. I will be reviewing the year-end budget adjustments for fiscal year 22. There is only one in the NMFA governmental fund. There is a request to increase operating costs by $125,000 for the debt service loan payoff that came in higher than budget due to accrued interest. This concludes the year-end budget adjustments.
Any questions? We have a motion and a second. Roll call vote.
Ms. Naya Flores.
Yes.
Mr. Chavez.
Yes.
Ms. Waters?
Yes.
Mr. Carter?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Ms. Nymeyer?
Yes.
Motion passes. Item agenda number four, consider approval of resolution 2022-34, a resolution approving the fourth quarter financial report as of June 30th, 2022. Ms. Hutsey.
Thank you again, Mayor Pro Tem and Council. I will be presenting the fourth quarter fiscal year 22 financial reports for your approval. You have in front of you the DFA recap. This information is the same as the June 2022 financial reports that were previously reviewed. However, the Department of Finance and Administration requires us to consolidate our city funds into their designated chart of accounts. DFA also requires that our governing body approve these fourth quarter financial reports and submit it along with our final budget. I'm sorry. I will stand for any questions.
Motion and a second. Roll call vote.
Ms. Naya Flores.
Yes.
Mr. Chavez.
Yes.
Ms. Waters.
Yes.
Mr. Carter.
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez.
Yes.
Ms. Nymeyer.
Yes.
Motion passes. Item agenda number five, consider approval of resolution 2022-35, a resolution approving the City of Carlsbad 2022-23 fiscal year final budget. Ms. Sutsego.
Thank you again, Mayor Pro Tem Council. Before you this evening is the final budget for fiscal year 2023. From the interim budget to the final budget, the city is increasing cash $4.2 million. There is a detailed summary in your packet that outlines this variance, but the primary items include FY23 beginning cash came in higher than anticipated at $104.4 million. In the interim, it was $99.3 million. Health insurance premiums were decreased by $889,000, and there were 5 projects added from the interim to the final budget. The city is budgeting an overall deficit in cash of $8.7 million. As with all budgets, the city budgets revenues very conservatively and costs at a premium. Therefore, the actual reduction in cash is projected to be much less or even favorable, similar to the current fiscal year actuals versus budget. Finally, I'd like to thank Chairman Rodriguez of the Budget Committee and the other members, Councilor Carter, Councilor Chavez, and Councilor Forrest, for their expertise and guidance in developing the fiscal year 2023 budget. And I will stand for any questions.
Motion and second. Roll call vote.
Ms. Anaya Flores.
Yes.
Mr. Chavez. Ms. Waters.
Yes.
Mr. Carter.
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez.
Yes.
Ms. Niemeyer.
Yes.
Next on the agenda is routine and regular business. All matters under this heading are considered routine by the City of Carlsbad and will be acted upon in one motion. There will be no separate discussion on these items. If discussion is desired on a particular item upon request, that item may be removed from the routine and regular business be considered separately. I ask C1, if we could have Mr. Ken Britt come up and give us a brief report.
Mayor and members of the council, tonight you have before you a request to award phase 4 of the Capitol Theater Rehabilitation Project to Greer Construction. You have a letter of recommendation from architect Larry Mitchell to that end, and we're ready to move forward into the auditorium of that building and build out the stage, replace acoustic plaster, and do some work in the cry rooms as well as the projection rooms. So if there's any questions on that.
Any
requests
to
a
final
place? It's a lot of work, and we would hope that there would be one more phase and we could be open for business. That's not including the annex, which would be something that would come later, so it would be functional. So, and of course, you all know it depends upon funding. The drawings are very near complete, for phase 5. Mr. Mitchell has those, and it would just take a little bit of wrap up to have them ready. So. Thank you.
Mayor, make a motion for approval.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Roll call vote.
Ms. Anaya Flores.
Yes.
Mr. Chavez.
Yes.
Ms. Waters.
Yes.
Mr. Carter.
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez.
Yes.
Ms. Niemeyer. Ms. Niemeyer.
Yes.
Thank you.
Motion passes. Next item on agenda is consider approval of temporary use application. Allowing local sales vending on city property at the Carlsbad Beach Park located at 814 East Riverside Drive by Agave Plaza LLC, applicant Patricia Bulware. Mr. Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor Pro Tem, Council. As stated, this is a request to have mobile vending within the city beach park at 814 East Riverside Drive by Agave Plaza LLC. They want to vend food and drinks, non-alcoholic. They want to locate a push cart up on top of the beach park there near the water park, which right now we don't have any vendors in that spot. We have approved, the council has approved 4 other mobile vendors to locate in the parking lot area, but nothing up top in the non-parking area. The applicant has obtained their city business registration. They also have their NEBD permit to operate. They're requesting to vend on Saturdays only, starting as soon as July 30th, and this will be through December 31st of 2022. Planning Department recommends approval of the request with the following conditions. The applicant shall not disturb the peace with a loudspeaker, megaphone, bell, music, or other disruptive noise. The applicant shall provide the city with a certificate of liability insurance bond with the city added as additional insured. And the approval of this request grants permission to the applicant to vend food and drinks, non-alcoholic, on city-owned property at the Beach Park north of the Water Park from Saturday, July 30th, 2022 until Saturday, December 3rd, 2022. And I'll stand for any questions. Any questions?
Have we ever allowed anybody to do that?
Not on a regular basis. I think that we may have allowed people with events in the past, but nothing like this request. That would be a question for the applicant. This is just the area that they requested. They thought that they could maybe stand out a little bit and be closer to the water park and maybe get more business that way.
If we allow one, it's just another time to do it at home.
That is a valid viewpoint.
I don't mind having more street, but that's a park meant for kids.
Yes, sir.
Families that enjoy not to have a dinner.
Yes, sir.
They have the same concerns as Jason. I'm not opposed to them being there either. I think they should maybe go back and try to do something else, but having up here on the office is opening the door for us to set a precedent, but I don't think we are prepared to say yes to the future over and over again. So I'm going to have to.
We have a motion and a second for denial of this request. Roll call vote.
Ms. Anaya Flores. Ms. Anaya Flores.
Yes.
Mr. Chavez.
Yes.
Ms. Waters.
Yes.
Mr. Carter.
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez.
Yes.
Ms. Niemeyer.
Yes.
Application is denied. Item number 8 is consider approval of request for Milton's Brewery to serve alcohol, beer, and wine on city streets during Milton's Brewing's September Beer Fest. Mr. Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor Pro Tem, council members. As stated, this is a request by Milton's Brewery to serve alcohol, beer, and wine on city streets during their annual September Beer Fest, which will be held on Saturday, September 24th, 2022. The event will be from 11 a.m. to 11:30 p.m., or 10 a.m. to 11:30 p.m. along Vermont Street and Canyon Street. There's a map in your packet that shows the area that they would cordon off to hold their event. They indicate that they'll have one entrance in and out of the event, and they will have somebody there checking IDs and giving out bracelets as they want the carry to be open throughout the entire event. They plan to have local vendors, a cornhole tournament. They'll have, of course, be set up by a licensed alcohol server. They'll cordon off the area. Alcohol will be served from 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. They will have bracelets that differentiate between people that are of age and that are not, and also for designated drivers, so that no designated drivers will be served alcohol. If it is the will of the council to allow beer and alcohol sales within city streets, city staff recommends approval with the following requirements. The alcohol server obtain all required licenses and permits to serve alcohol. Milton's Brewing and the alcohol server comply with all laws, rules, regulations, requirements, and restrictions for service at the location, included but not limited to fencing of the service area, carding of customers, and providing appropriate security. Both Milton's Brewing shall name the city of Carlsbad as an additional insured on their general liability insurance and their liquor server insurance in the amount to be approved by the city administrator. I'll stand for any questions.
What's the date on that?
They're going to have it on September 24th. It's a Saturday.
Midwest Hall pulled up there and had the necessary security and requirements, so I'll make a motion.
Motion in second, roll call vote.
Ms. Anaya Flores.
Yes.
Mr. Chavez.
Yes.
Ms. Waters.
Yes.
Mr. Carter.
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez.
Yes.
Ms. Niemeyer.
Motion passes. Item number nine, consider approval of request by Cabin City Renaissance Festival to host a Renaissance Festival on city property at the Carlsbad Beach Park and serve alcohol, beer, wine, and spirits. Mr. Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor Pro Tem, council members. As stated, this is a request by Cabin City Renaissance Festival to hold a Renaissance Festival on city property and to serve alcohol, beer, wine, and spirits on city property. Cabin City Renaissance Festival wishes to host their Renaissance Festival on Friday, September 30th, and Saturday, October 1st, 2022, at the Carlsbad Beach Park. There's a map in your packet showing the area that they would like to hold the event. There's one edit to the boundary. We ask that they exclude out of their event the splash pad, as they're going to charge, they want to charge a $15 entrance fee to the event, and we ask them to take the splash pad out, and they've done so. The event will be from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. on Friday, September 30th, and from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. on Saturday, October 1st. As part of this event, event organizers plan to bring in food trucks, vendors, a variety of entertainment, and an armored combat professional knights tournament, along with alcohol vendors, beer, wine, and spirits offered by breweries, wineries, meaderies, and the distillery. The event will be a paid ticketed entry event, and the entire event area will be fenced off by event organizers. The event organizers would like for the event to be an open alcohol carry throughout the event area, but plans for a separate beer garden area are in place if needed. The Renaissance Festival will have one entrance for attendees, and security will be provided. All entrants 21 years or older can obtain a bracelet to wear, and it will be a requirement to purchase beer or liquor within the event. All designated drivers that enter the event will be given a separate bracelet as identification. No alcohol will be allowed to be taken out of the designated event area. If it is the will of the council to allow a paid entry event as well as beer, wine, and liquor sales and consumption within the designated area located on city property, city staff recommends the following requirements. The alcohol server obtain all required licenses and permits. All breweries, wineries, meaderies, and distilleries, and the alcohol servers shall comply with all laws, rules, regulations, requirements, and restrictions for service at the location, including but not limited to fencing of the service area, guarding of customers, and providing appropriate security. And Cabin City Renaissance Festival and all breweries, wineries, meaderies, and distilleries shall name the city of Carlsbad as an additional insured on the general liability insurance and liquor server insurance in the amount to be approved by the city administrator. And the designated event area shall not include the beach park splash pad that shall remain open and unobstructed for public use.
Questions?
Mayor Pro Tem, is there a representative?
Is there a representative present?
Yes, sir.
Please approach the podium. State your name for the record.
Yes, I'm Shay Gregory. I think that the word size like to clarify, and this is a passion project for me.
Is this a big draw to this?
We currently expect about 6,000 attendees.
6,000?
Yes, we have had about 800 people say that they will go on Facebook. We have sold about 80 tickets, and also due to the people who go to the cruises and Albuquerque, etc., we believe that we can probably draw in about 6,000 people to this.
Beer and wine typically on city streets or properties is something that we have about spirits. Is that something that's a hard line for you guys to have?
We only have one vendor currently who is going to sell spirits. So then that would not be a hard line, no. But it would be a little bit of a shame to give them a refund and sure. Tell them no. But sure. Of course, that is not a hard line.
Trying to be open-minded.
How much more different this will be.
Will they do it on the streets or just inside the building?
I don't think it'll be after that, do you, Jeff? For Hogfest. correct. So they will be fully, like, insured, and they have been on the History Channel, National Geographic, and Netflix as well, so they are fully insured and licensed, and they are professionals and licensed for them. Any other questions?
Excuse me, that's a big second. I'll have a big second.
Motion and a second.
Ms. Anaya Flores.
Yes.
Mr. Travis.
Yes.
Ms. Waters.
Yes.
Mr. Carter.
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez.
Yes.
Ms. Niemeyer.
Yes.
Approved.
Thank you, Council.
Item number 10, consider approval of a request for a business license to conduct door-to-door sales and distribution of educational books and applications by Southwestern Advantage. Contact Jenica Kersala. Mr. Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor Pro Tem, council members. As stated, this is a request for a business license to conduct door-to-door sales by Southwestern Advantage. They wish to sell educational books and applications. This is a request that the city has seen for the last couple of years. Ms. Kersala is a new contact for this, but if you'll look in your packet, the police department did provide a background check report that was positive in nature. As such, the planning department would recommend approval of the business license in compliance with section 28-166 of the Carlsbad Code of Ordinances.
Questions? Is there a representative of the agency? It'll be the pleasure of the council.
Jeff, what are the proposed hours of operation? Is it through 9 to 8?
I don't believe that they stated in their application what their hours of operation would be. Normally we say basically from about 9 or 10 in the morning until dark. Now, if it's the will of the council, you can put specific hours on that if you feel like that's something that needs to happen. It's certainly something.
I feel like in the past we've done that with other door-to-door people just because in the summertime it doesn't occur until 8:45. Pretty sure we discussed 8 o'clock as a cutoff in the past. So I would make a motion for approval with that stipulation.
Second. The motion is second with time stipulation added on. Roll call vote.
Ms. Anaya Flores.
Yes.
Mr. Travis.
Yes.
Ms. Waters.
Yes.
Mr. Carter.
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez.
Yes.
Ms. Niemeyer.
Yes.
Motion passed. Next item on agenda is consider approval of resolution 2022-36, a resolution ratifying the agreement between the city of Carlsbad and Southeastern New Mexico Economic Development District for 2022-2023 membership. Mr. Lowe, if you would please.
Mayor Pro Tem, members of the council, as stated, this is the annual membership for the dues for the city of Carlsbad with the Southeastern New Mexico Economic Development District in the amount of $7,641. The district assists the city of Carlsbad with infrastructure planning and they help us coordinate our ICIP process. This agreement is required for DFA for the disbursement of local funds as well.
Motion for approval. Motion and a second. Roll call vote.
Ms. Anaya Flores.
Yes.
Mr. Chavez.
Yes.
Ms. Waters.
Yes.
Mr. Carter.
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez.
Yes.
Ms. Niemeyer.
Yes.
Item passes. Next item would be infrastructure capital improvement plan preliminary list presentation for fiscal year 2023 through 2027 for council review and recommendations. We call upon Ms. Barrios Testa.
Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem and City Council members. I appreciate the time and the opportunity to provide you with this presentation. And just to provide a quick overview of the process, the capital improvement process includes It's a five-year plan for, it's a tool to prioritize projects for the city, prioritizing them for different funding programs, you know, projects that can't be funded with local funds only. So we go through this process every year. As you all know, the first document is a timeline, a schedule, and it usually runs about the same every year. Of course, the COVID pandemic did change it a little bit, as you'll see. Some of the areas are not shaded that should have been, but you know, things just kind of changed, and we worked through the process as best as possible. This year, they've moved the deadline back closer to the August date that used to be in place, and so we were here today to you know, for you to review this the list. So. Staff coordinates the process following the budget cycle, as you'll note in the benchmarks you'll see there. And then in the next document is actually Exhibit A and B are the preliminary lists that are containing 49 municipality projects and 5 senior facility projects. We just process all of this at one time. They do require that the senior facilities have a separate one for each facility. So we'll have two in this case. The city also includes a project development stage, and basically it's that long list of projects that includes the a brief description, all of the budget, and funds that are still needed, and stretching it out into the 5 years, so that way we can do projects, you know, as we can get funding for them. So you'll see that in that document. It's all listed in the order that is in the preliminary list. You can go on to the next. You also find the project summaries. So it's just, that's just showing a little bit more of the description, easier to read, of course. And they're in that same, the same list, priority level. As we go through the ICIP planning process, each project is evaluated using a risk matrix, which looks at things like legal, and if we go to the matrix, you'll see that we're looking at legal and regulatory requirements, safety and security issues, risk of failure, strategic growth, opportunity, sustainability, projects that provide continuous improvement. These help us to determine criticality of the projects and how they're going to be based in the list. In your packet, you'll also know more information on the evaluation method and the results for each of the projects that are listed. They get, you know, a certain amount of scoring, and you'll see that they're moved up into the priority level as they score higher in each of those categories. Some of them will not have scores for some of the items, so we try to look at least two and give the highest points that we can in those categories. Because, you know, we want to keep it at 31 possible points. So finally, in your packet, you'll see the public input documentation, which is a very important piece when developing an ICIP. All of the comments are considered when scoring and finalizing the ranking list, as well as we also look at what projects we've already received funding for. And of course, we want to keep those up high because we've already got state or federal commitment to those projects. So it's a good practice to continue and try to fund those at a higher level. So as the next part of the phase, this is this presentation, and we're pleased to present that list of projects to you for review and additional comments. So you may comment tonight, or if you prefer to send any changes or comments by Monday, July 29th, so that gives us time to revise it and bring it before City Council for approval at the August 9th meeting, City Council meeting. And the project information is required to be uploaded by August 19th for the municipality projects, and then September 9th for the senior projects, so there's still a little bit of time to get that all in. And so now I stand for any questions, comments, or any other support or any comments. Thank you.
Thank you for all the work that's gone into this, and ask the council
CIP for them to consider in the funding process. The federal government doesn't look at ICIP, but they do look at the public comment type information, and we always provide this as a source that, hey, we've gone through this process and the community supports it, and they agree with the priority level. So just to kind of put it out there that we're trying to seek, you know, any kind of funding sources that are out there. Thank you.
Thank you. Item number 13 on the agenda is a presentation to discuss possible redistricting plans for the City of Carlsbad municipal wards required by the New Mexico State statute as a result of the 2020 census. Presentation will be by Mr. Roderick Ayer, New Mexico Demographic Research LLC. Ask Ms. Madrid Hoyer to lead this.
Tonight is a presentation by Mr. Adair, who is an expert in this field on redistricting, and we are proud to have him here tonight to discuss and to present to you various plans that he devised for your consideration. We're not going to be voting, or nothing is going to be decided tonight. Only feel free to ask him any questions that you may have at this time. Mr. Ryder Adair is New Mexico Demographics.
Thank you, Mr. Good Boyer and Mr. Mayor and members of the City Council. Thank you for letting me be here to explain this. The redistricting is not something that's in the U.S. Constitution. Many people think that the Census Bureau has something to do with that, but it's not really the case. The reason that we have a census in the U.S. mentioned in the U.S. Constitution is for something called reapportionment, which is to make sure that each of the 13 original colonies and now the 50 states have the right proportion of U.S. House representatives. That's the only reason that we had the census. And for, oddly enough, for the first 170 years, no one paid much attention to redistricting within each of those things. Nobody interfered. Some people did object through the years, but the Supreme Court would rule each time that it was non-justiciable. It was not something that the federal court could play a role in because these were state issues. Nothing interfered with the way states did things. And lots of times states didn't do anything. In 1962, case finally appeared before the Supreme Court from Tennessee, because Tennessee had not redistricted or tried to make their state house and state senate districts equal since 1901. 61 years had gone by. And an individual from Memphis named Baker sued because he was worried about school funding and road funding and all kinds of things, and there were rural districts in Tennessee that had only 9,000 people, whereas the district he lived in for the state senate had 90,000. And so when you have that, then the individual representing a state house or state senate district in Tennessee who represented 9,000 people was exercising 10 times more power with his or her vote than the person from Memphis was. And so finally this case, Baker versus Carr, reached the Supreme Court, and they ruled that it was justiciable. And the Warren Court intervened and handed down this decision that you must make things substantially equal. This was followed by a couple of cases, Westbury versus Sanders and Reynolds versus Sims, in which they said things like one man, one vote, which today, 60 years later, we would say one person, one vote. And the idea is that the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment means that people have to have equal power when you do these things. This had an effect on New Mexico within about 4 years. Yes?
Mr. Derrick, could you speak a little closer into the mic? Some of the people on the phone are...
Okay, I apologize. Yes, is this better?
Yes.
Within about 4 years, Governor Dave Cargo brought a case of making New Mexico have districts.
from the time we got our second congressman in 1940, after the 1940 census, from the 1942 election through the 1966 election, everybody voted for two congressmen. They were at large. There were no districts at all. And so you went in and voted as if you were like in the Village of Hope, voting to vote for two people. You know, there's districting makes no sense really in Hope or Hagerman or Dexter or places like that or Loving, because you might end up with almost nobody voting in some of the districts. Very few people live there. But New Mexico did that for 26 years. Finally, in 1968, we got District 1, which was North, and District 2, which is the South. And then in 1980, we got the third congressional district. So how did this principle of one person, one vote, eventually through a series of lawsuits, came on down to the county level and to the school district level and to the municipal level. So New Mexico adopted laws because of lawsuits that brought this down, saying that everybody, all local governments have to provide equal power to each citizen. And New Mexico adopted a law that said if you have a school district that has greater than 16,000 people living in it, not students, but people, like Carlsbad has well over 30,000 living in the school district. They have to have districts. You can't have your school district board members elected at large. And if a county has more than 13,000 people, which we have 27 of our 33 counties have that, then you have to have districts for the county. So the county was redistricted last year. Artesia, I'll get that in a moment. And so the other six counties in New Mexico, like Harding and Debaca and Union and Hidalgo and Catron, they can elect their county commissioners at large. Everybody gets to vote for all of them, but not in Eddy County and not in most of the counties. Artesia, so what happened, we adopted another law in the last 3 years called the Local Election Act, and 28 of the 106 municipalities opted out of it. Artesia was one, I believe. And so they had to be redistricted last year. The 78 of the 106 opted in, so you had your elections in November of last year instead of March of this year. And those have to be redistricted this year by the new incoming council and mayor. And 1-3-13 requires that you have your districts within 5% of an ideal size. So what happened with Carlsbad during the census? Carlsbad grew well above the average in New Mexico, grew at a rate of 23% over the last decade, and now is New Mexico's ninth largest city in population, although it's the seventh largest in physical size. And so you have a population of 32,238, which means that with your four wards, you have an ideal size for the four wards of 8,060. That means that if all four wards were 8,060, every single man, woman, child, it's not registered voters, it's all population, all of those people, all 32,238 people in Carlsbad would have the same political power exercised through you. If one of you represented 4,000 people and the other represented 12,000, then the counselor who represents 4,000 people would have three times the power of the counselor who represents 12,000. And that has been declared unconstitutional by the U.S. Supreme Court. And you can see the current map there before you, with the city has 31.8 square miles, and Ward 1 is over 13.5 square miles, and Ward 3 is fewer than, less than 2 square miles. And Wards 3 and 4 were more than 15% away from the ideal, with Ward 3 needing to gain 15% more people, and Ward 4 needing to lose 15%. None of the wards, to my knowledge, lost any population. When you see this minus on here, that minus and plus, that's the deviation from the ideal population. It's not a loss of population. Carlsbad gained over 6,000 people over the last 10 years, so none of the wards lost any actual population. You also see the race and ethnicity, which is always an issue in redistricting all around the country and in New Mexico. Carlsbad currently has one majority Hispanic ward, and it has one plurality Hispanic ward. And the other minority groups recognized in New Mexico have a very negligible population in Carlsbad, just as they do statewide. So moving on to the Plan A, which is the least change, and I noticed on the current ward that Councilors Chavez and Forrest, Councilor Chavez, I think, covers up Councilor Forrest. That's because they either live across the street or something like that. So sorry about that, not being able to see that. But they appear on Plan A, at least you can see their names there. There's a little bit of difficulty in the city is oddly shaped, but don't feel bad. Every city that we have worked so far, this is the 11th, I think, is oddly shaped. So you can do all kinds of gaining of population. You gained about as much as any city there is, except maybe Edgewood grew by 65%, but then that's because they annexed. You can either gain by having more people move in, or births, or you can just annex a whole bunch of land and gain all that way. So keep that in mind if you want to grow. In the least change plan, least change because it makes the fewest changes to the census blocks. Do we have a way of showing the census blocks?
Sure.
Figure out the.
Let's see. Oops.
District Ward 3, I believe it was, where we had to go from. Either the canal, the railroad over to the river and take in a bunch more population there from Vine and Glendale, Blodgett, all the way down to Mariposa and everything. All that had to be taken in because the ward had to gain a huge number of people. And it was a little bit of a challenge for a couple of wards because Councilor Walter Scheid lives at the opposite end of the district from Councilor Carter, and both had to stay in. It's very unpopular for a demographer to walk into any entity and don't have the incumbents still living in their districts. Matter of fact, I'm just not going to do that. I don't want to be fired on the spot. So you have to keep everybody in their districts. That's a legitimate consideration in redistricting. And so in Ward 1 as well, you had Councilor Flores and Councilor Rodriguez living a good long ways away from each other. The only ones who cooperated were Councilors Chavez and Flores. Apparently lived next door to each other. So you can see that then in the demographic data view, Ward 1 is within 7 people of the ideal, and Ward 2 is 344 below, and Wards 3 and 4, 172 and 177 higher than the ideal. But all of that is within the 5% deviation that's allowed by state law. So I think, go ahead and zoom in if you would.
Where do you want to zoom in? Three?
Go ahead and just go over, go into the area where it says Niemeyer, right there between, because that had to be the place where we picked up the most people. And you can see those are
census blocks up there.
Yeah,
zoom in some more, but between the river and,
is that the Union, is that the railroad?
Yes.
Yeah, go to your right and zoom in. So you can see, starting at the top up there, you've got a census block with 6 people, 13 people, 13, 20, 2 people, 26, 19. And so the Census Bureau provides us with this handy information where we can just click on it and make sure that we try to stay along something that makes sense, like the river as a divider. Don't want to, and something that's geographically, that's visible to the individual. Can't always do that. Sometimes you have to go with an arroyo or something like that. It's not necessarily that clear, but if possible, we keep it along a railroad line or along a river. Streets, obviously, that's the most common dividing line for a municipality. And you can see that we had to go up and click on all of those census blocks in order to grow District 3 out to where it had to be. If you have any questions on any of these, I'd be happy to try to answer them. We can put up Plan B now, which is compact, the most compact. There are a number of formulas developed by political scientists that are embedded in Maptitude or AutoBound or any of the various redistricting tools, which theoretically tell us what the measure of compactness is. It's very difficult for many New Mexico cities because even though this meets the criteria of being the most compact, it still doesn't look compact because I can't just draw four squares like that because number one, again, you have to consider that where do your incumbents live? And that would knock them out. Secondly, when you do that, you don't get the equal population. So this is the theoretically most compact looking, the blockiest that you can make the four wards in Carlsbad. For me, it doesn't look that much different from, you know, eyeballing all the others. It's because you have this big pump handle going out here, headed toward Hobbs, I guess, or pointing toward Lovington or Tatum. I don't know where that would end up if you kept drawing the line out like that, but you guys are the ones who drew these maps, not me. So this is what you have on Plan B, anywhere from minus 3.51 to plus to minus 4.58 to plus 4.04%, but all within the deviation. Under lease change, you also keep the one majority Hispanic ward and the one plurality Hispanic ward. And on plan B, you have one majority Hispanic ward and two plurality Hispanic wards. So moving on to Plan C, Plan C is what your districts would look like if you had a perfect plan, so to speak. That is, if every single man, woman, and child living in the political boundaries of Carlsbad exercised exactly the same political power. And you can get it down to a deviation of minus one for two, and then the others have zero deviation. So one person below and two of the wards and one person and exactly the ideal population, the other two. We couldn't do it
make it the same exactly, because your population is not 32,240, it's 32,238. And so mathematically it can be done. Under this one, you have two majority Hispanic districts. Although in none of them, only in the one district you have a majority Hispanic voting age population district. Carlsbad follows the same pattern of the entire state of New Mexico, which is that the voting age population is more heavily represented in the Anglo population than it is in the Hispanic population. There will always be anywhere from a 3 to 5% lower percentage among Hispanic adults, and this by a similar amount higher among Anglo adults in every city in the state. Because as a demographer, we look across the country, Hispanics have more children and Anglos have fewer. And among Blacks, Native Americans, and Asians, their ratio of children to adults is roughly equal. There's not a big divide like that. So that is where we are with regard to the three options you have before you and your current districts. So if you have any questions about the whole process or about these particular plans specifically, I would be happy to try to answer them.
Rod, I have the census blocks up where you can see on the equal population where you have to reach in and grab certain census blocks. I don't know if you want to explain that.
That's a great point. When you're going for a perfect plan for population, then you're only considering population. You're not considering any beauty of the lines or anything else. So you can see where right there with five people, there's a block sticking up from District 1 into District 3 and surrounding it, because again, I'm shooting only for perfect population. And similarly, just a few inches over, you can see 12 people in another block like that. And there's similar things all around, probably, where you might have jagged edges, because again, if I see 8,057 and somebody else is 8,063, then I try to find a block somewhere where I can find three people to move from one and three people to move to the other, and so on. So the equal population plan will always have these little, not always, but usually has these little jagged edges or indentions like that, because again, the goal is trying to get equal population, not a pretty map.
Any questions?
Great thorough report.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Item on agenda would be council committee reports. If not, is there anyone in the audience? Hearing none, next item on the agenda would be a move for adjournment. Not Lisa Maya Foyce.
Mayor Pro Tem, I move a motion for adjournment.
A motion and a second. Roll call vote.
Ms. Maya Foyce.
Yes.
Mr. Chavez.
Yes.
Ms. Waters. Mr. Carter.
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez.
Yes.
Ms. Niemeyer.
Yes.
We are adjourned.